We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time. And welcome to the show. I get to record a podcast where the New Orleans Pelicans didn't lose earlier or the day before or the day before that. Like, it's actually been like 3 days since a loss. They actually have a win, too. I'm so excited. I'm boiling over with joy.
And that loss was a close game against a great team, so I could even take away a lot from that. I'm excited. I was, if we would have done this podcast last night, which we originally planned, I might have been a little depressed, not because of a Trump presidency, but because we actually both picked the correct record for last week. And you done went and screwed up the recording, and it never got put out, so people aren't going to believe us. But we both predicted 1-3.
Yeah.
Now the world will never hear it.
Yeah. And I think I picked the correct game, too, didn't I? I think I picked Milwaukee as the win.
It's pronounced Milwaukee.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you might be wrong about that.
Ask Alice Cooper, but let's go forward.
Okay. I wonder how many people even know who Alice Cooper is at this point.
I don't know. We could put a poll up.
I will say that his Muppets show appearance was one of the highlights of my childhood.
All right. And you have turned into the Virgin Podcast.
So anyways. Now
switch over to Pelicans basketball.
All right. So when there was, say, 4 minutes to go in that game, and be honest, what was your percentage chance that the Pelicans were winning that game, the game against Boston tonight? And in case you didn't catch it, people, 106-105, Celtics lost to the Pelicans at home. What was your chance? 5 minutes ago, 4 minutes ago.
I would say 20-25%, and a big generous part of the reason why was because I just couldn't believe what Alvin was choosing to do with his rotation late in that game. And the funniest part was the guy I was begging him to get off the floor was Tim Frazier. And of course he gets the big steal and the free throws down the stretch.
Although, to be fair, that wasn't really a big steal. They threw the ball right to him. But he got the free throws, so you can't really complain, right? Well, he had some of his free throws.
I mean, it's just, it's amazing. I mean, Anthony Davis, his body is just starting to break down, and you can't use a guy that much and not expect it to happen. So, you know, it is what it is, and hopefully some guys coming back will allow them to kind of tone down his usage a little bit. But so, I mean, he's 60% of himself, and you look on the court late in games, and who's the second best offensive player? Like, I'm sitting there debating between Langston Galloway, who the Knicks wanted nothing to do with and basically just allowed to become an unrestricted free agent instead of a restricted one so they could re-sign Lance Thomas, and Terrence Jones, who, again, the Rockets wanted nothing to do with and signed for the minimum. Those are the two guys I'm debating between of who the second best offensive player is on this team down the stretch. Like, we could talk about coaching, and I think Alvin Gentry, you know, did some things in this game that I didn't agree with. At the end of the day, like, look at the talent that's on this team. Like, it's just, it's embarrassing. And it's not like they were going with an all-defensive lineup, because who was the second-best defensive player on that team? Solomon Hill, a guy who got blown by and T.J. Warren for a game-winning dunk a week ago? Like, that's just a terrible, terrible finishing five, especially when AD is less than 100%.
Yeah, and you saw exactly what happened, where their offense would just, there was a bunch of screens on the perimeter, the ball would move about 2 feet past the three-point line, and then either a shot would be jacked up or they had to reset. And that is the sum total of the penetration they were getting in the fourth quarter, was 2 feet past the three-point line. At one point, they were just throwing it to Anthony Davis and hoping that he could drive one on five and score. It's kind of ridiculous. Anthony Davis, by the way, 25-16 with four steals and a very, very clearly stiff back. Like, he did not look as fluid as he had earlier in this season at all. 38 minutes.
Yeah, not on either side of the ball. And,
nope.
And I just don't understand, when they're clogging up the lane like that, why you don't put out your best shooter. And I'm not talking about Buddy Hield. I'm talking about the man, the myth. Yes, the best shooter on this team, Dante Cunningham.
Yeah, he's got the best shooting percentage.
Can you believe that's where we're at? Like, this is guy.
He wasn't terrible last year. He had his career year last year. So maybe he's more careering it.
but I mean, that's where we're at with this team. We're honestly, if you want to put the best possible shooter out there, you got to put out Dante Cunningham and stick him in a corner. Like,
to be fair, I think Etuan Moore is a better shooter than him. I do. But,
well, of course he is. But
he's not available
this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so right now, you could pick any Pelican shooting an open three from any spot on the court. You could put him above the break, in the corner, top of it, whatever. One shot to win a game. Who would you honestly pick, and from where?
I would still I would take Moore from the corner, but okay. Dante would be a very close second there.
It's just freaking insane.
And nobody from above the break. That's like, I think I've seen Moore hit it a couple times. Galloway hit it a couple times. That's it. Like, it seems like every above the break three this team takes, it's not that they miss it. They like clang off the side of the rim. It's awful.
Hey, Solomon Hill could airball with the best of them, don't you?
He wasn't brought in to be a shooter.
Okay, Ryan, but you can't airball.
This is what I've decided about Solomon Hill. Solomon Hill is the best player at almost doing something good, because I don't know how many times this game and other games where it feels like he's almost done something really good and then fails disastrously. So he almost gets steals. He tips the ball and almost gets to it, but then it goes to somebody else on the team and they hit an open three. He almost gets a dunk tonight. He almost gets a rebound. He almost passes the ball. He almost manages to dribble. Like, it's pretty amazing. He's almost a basketball player, but not quite.
Yep. And he almost almost takes up 15% of our cap.
But he's plus 7 tonight. He's led the team in plus minus tonight. So clearly, You're just ripping on the wrong dude, man.
Well, so there's one other guy I want to get to, but, I mean, every player, and I know a lot of people are guilty about this with Omir, is that, you know, you bash on a player usually relative to his cost. Like, if Omir Asik was on a minimum contract, I don't think people would really hate on him. They would laugh about how bad his hands are sometimes, but it wouldn't be a big deal.
Right.
But since he's making the contract he is, people get more angry and more feel whatever. What would lay out the parameters of the contract that if Solomon Hill had, that what he's producing and how he's playing, you'd be perfectly fine with? Wouldn't think he's a bargain. You wouldn't think he's overpaid. It's just, yep, that's about right.
2 years, $5 million each year with a team option on the second year.
So basically Langston Galloway's contract, but with a team option instead of a player.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I'm still frustrated with Hill's contract. People will come back at me and say, well, you liked Galloway and he stinks too. Well, first of all, I always said he was really streaky, and I think he's played better than Hill and helped the team more than Hill, but I think Galloway's playing right to what his contract is playing. I agree. If Hill was on a similar contract to Galloway, I would have no issues, but man,
so,
it.
I will say, though, I am optimistic that Hill can play better than he has been so far this season. I legitimately feel that way. Do I ever think he'll play up to what contract he has right now? Like, not unless he comes back after a couple summers and has actually developed a three-point shot. And it's something that can happen. He's still a young guy. Bruce Bowen didn't have a three-point shot until he was 29 years old. So, and Hill, don't get me wrong, Hill's not even in the same neighborhood as a defender as Bruce Bowen. But he could turn into something that's not a complete and utter waste. But so far this season, he's been pretty awful.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know. It's just, to me, he's no different than Dante Cunningham or 10 or 15 other guys you could have gotten cheap even this summer and just given him a shot. I mean, heck, is he playing any better than Sean Kilpatrick or James Ennis even?
No.
Let alone guys that I would have loved an Ian Clark or even taking a chance on James Michael McAdoo. Like, could have gotten all those guys for pennies, and he's no different. So I just never understood the move. I never will. But
so I did, and actually I heard you say a couple things about Solomon Hill before, and I mostly on your piece, but also on Twitter. I want to disagree with you about something. I think in some ways it makes the matter worse, but you make the point that you think the reason why Solomon Hill got the contract he did was because of his playoff performance last year. That because all year long he was this player. He's a player we've been seeing. And then in the playoffs suddenly he learned how to actually hit three-pointers, and suddenly he shot pretty well. Small sample size theater. He defended the four at a pretty good rate, but of course he's defending a small four. And suddenly, you know, he gets a giant contract. I actually 100% believe that Hill joining this team is an artifact of Dell's scouting Solomon Hill. I think he fell in love with Solomon Hill in college. He saw glimpses of that borne out in the Pacers world, and he went and got his guy and put a giant contract down the table because he knew he was going to look smart doing it.
Oh, I think they would have signed him regardless.
Okay.
I think the contract would have been 2 to 3 years for $5 to $6 million per year if his numbers in the postseason were exactly like they were all season.
Okay.
But Dell is like a quarterback who's pre-snap read. You know, they know that they're going to throw to one guy. He was going to go get Solomon Hill because he knew he wasn't going to be able to get anybody who actually could play basketball because they'd want to go somewhere else. And he was going to get Solomon Hill.
That's so harsh.
I don't know who, But one or two other teams probably were interested at around the $8 or $9 million mark. And Dell said, no, I'm getting this guy. I raise. And, you know, I'm not going to regret it. I'm going to make sure I get this guy. And that's why he paid what he paid. But his value was always supposed to be a $5 or $6 million player. And he made a couple of threes. Like, do you remember that one game against Phoenix where, like, Willie Green started the game 12 for 12 or 13 for 13? Like, Solomon Hill didn't learn how to shoot threes or get better at shooting threes. He just had a little bit of a hot stretch the way that Willie Green did in that game against Phoenix. But you don't pay somebody based off of that any more than on the larger sample size. So
Tony Delk had a 50-point game once. Tony Delk.
Gosh, I remember that draft like it was yesterday. I wanted them to walk out with John Wallace so bad, but instead they took this scrub named Kobe. yeah, Kobe was the 13th pick.
They got Vlade Divac.
Yeah.
Got them Vlade Divac. Can't be Vlade.
That draft was so stacked, and all I wanted was John Wallace. Like, Nash, Peja Stojakovic.
Yeah, you weren't the only person, though. John Wallace was, like, hot stuff in college.
Oh, man, he, like, single-handedly carried Syracuse that year. Like, but whatever. Tony Delk talk. So, yeah, Hill is what it is. I'm gonna try to drop it, and I don't want to be right about him. I want him to become everything he could be, but he is just an unskilled NBA player. Like, what was the game, the play against the Lakers where he was, like, driving on a fast break by himself, and he just kind of fell to the floor and dropped the ball? Like, he just does not have skill. Yeah. But whatever. That's not the guy I want to talk most about. The guy I want to talk most about from today's game is I want to get your overall opinion, because the box score definitely says one thing, and the highlights would say the same thing. But give me your overall scouting report on
Terrence Jones
from this game. Yep.
Yeah, so I knew you were going to go with Terrence Jones, because I have the same feel of Terrence Jones as I did for Lance Stephenson. And it's just that sometimes he looks really good doing what he's doing, and everything feels wonderful and it's going the right way, but you're always kind of on the edge of your seat because you think something might break at any moment. And tonight, that's exactly what we saw. But if someone takes just a few minutes and watches Terrence Jones on defense, and I want to give him his props, because he played with a lot of effort. He did pretty well tonight. But just take a moment on any play where he is forced to be the off-ball defender on a pick and roll. So a pick and roll happens. He needs a switch. He's now guarding the guy who handed the ball off, not the ball handler, or the guy who did the screen and flare some direction. Terrence Jones runs in more circles on the court than I have ever seen a person in my life. He literally has no idea which direction he's supposed to run. So he runs one way, and if the guy, his teammate is guarding that person, he turns around in a circle and runs back the other direction, which just leaves all kinds of space out there. It is absolutely crazy. It's kind of depressing watching him on defense, but then he has moments on offense where it's fun to watch. And honestly, like, this team desperately needs somebody with a little bit of offensive touch, just anywhere other than Anthony Davis. So you almost got to play him.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think this is where Isaiah Thomas actually hurt the Celtics tonight, is there were so many times Terrence Jones, and that's with an E at the end of his first name, whoever's doing the Pelicans locker room, where Terrence Jones, like, was pointing and had no idea who to cover on the weak side and was just completely lost. But since Isaiah Thomas was just holding the ball and, you know, looking for his own, the Pelicans didn't get burned nearly as much as they will against, like, a team like San Antonio. Like, the Pelicans are just going to get absolutely killed every second Terrence Jones is on the court. And you know who's another guy who hurts my eyes to watch on off-ball defense is Langston Galloway.
Yeah.
He just stares at the ball and completely loses his man Good on-ball defender. I think he had some nice positions against Thomas in the fourth quarter today, but gosh, he might be one
of the most physically tough guys on this team. Like, you get a feeling that he would be happy to mug somebody.
Whoa. All right.
Going to the rim. Like, mug him. Not like mug somebody for their money, but like, if they're going to the rim and they beat him, he'd be happy to just, like, you know, the old David West karate chop to the back of the head as they go by just because he's pissed off that he got beat. I could see Galloway doing that to them. Just horse collar him and put him on their face.
No, but I mean, I agree with you on Jones. Like, the highlights, if you just put together, I forget who does it, like Basketball Breakdown or whatever, where they do like a highlight package of almost every player for every game. But if you put together the highlight package of Terrence Jones for this game, you're going to see that tip slam that he got. You're going to see, another dunk that he got underneath. You're going to see him running the fast break, which led to a layup for Frazier, and then the second one got him to the free throw line. You're going to see a couple of blocks where he had, some second
nice
effort. Yeah, you're going to see him contesting out on the perimeter one play that basically forced Jarebko into a turnover, which led to a Pelicans fast break. Like, the highlights of him from this game are going to say, why in the world would we ever play Omir a single minute? Like, this should be Jones's job, and he should get 30 minutes a night with Anthony Davis. But all the other things that don't show up in the highlights, or at least the Pelicans' highlights, it just makes it frustrating, because this is a guy who, when he does the things he does well, he's somebody that could really unlock a lot for this Pelicans team, and all you want him to do is not do the other things terribly, and I just don't know if he could do that, and I still think he's a guy that you almost can't play in certain matchups just because of the weaknesses that he does have.
Yeah. I'll also say if I would rank him as the, other than Davis, who does it for scoring reasons, he is probably the top ball stopper on the team. I feel good about how Galloway and Hill and even Heald and Frazier, they all move the ball around the perimeter. Cunningham, they'll try to find an open guy if they can and move it around the perimeter. If Jones touches the ball on the perimeter, he'll grab it. He'll look around for a couple seconds, judge whether he should be moving. He might fake a shot, and then he'll move the ball. And it's a little bit of a problem. But, also, let's be on our big man options of Ashik and Cunningham and Jones. Just, if I told you you had to play one of these guys 24 minutes a game, the other two guys would just get whatever's left over behind Davis, but you had to pick one and you gave him half the game for this team and what it needs, which of these guys are you going to play in for those 24 minutes?
For right now, Terrence Jones, but with a healthy Pelicans team, I think it would be Ashik.
Yeah.
The last guy I really want to talk about overall, in the last four games, he's averaging 8.5 points. He's shooting, 9 of 29 from the field, so what's that? That's like 31-32%. Assists are still there because he has the ball in his hand so much, but if you look at the numbers we were getting from Tim Frazier and the efficiency and the field goal percentage early in the season, and now you've just seen these stat lines the last four games or so, do you think he's starting to struggle, run into a little bit of a wall because he hasn't played this much in the NBA? Teams are studying the tape and have a scouting report on him now. What do you think about the way that Frazier's been playing this last week or so?
So 9 of 21 is more like 40%. But
I said 9 of 29.
Oh, 9 of 29. Oh, you're right. Okay. That's pretty bad. Tim Frazier's, to be honest with you, it's a function of A, he's now on the scouting report, and B, the other team knows exactly what's going to happen when he has the ball. If he's going to try to make a move, he's going to try to drive to the rim or pass it to Davis, and they can just focus on shutting this down, and they don't have to worry about anybody else on the team. Like, Frazier's not good enough to carry an offensive load and create shots when there is nobody else who can. Who's gonna cheat off of Solomon Hill and Langston Galloway and Buddy right now? Everybody's cheating off those guys to go help against Frazier. So he's in a role that's too much for him already, and he's being basically focused, and that's just murdering him. And we've all said that Frazier is a better as a third guard on a team. Like, I think that if he was your third guard coming off your bench, you should be fairly happy with that.
Do you think he will be the third guard on this team?
Yes. I don't know if they're going to feed Hield. I don't know. I don't honestly know if Frazier's going to be a third guard on the team. I think when Drew comes back, for maybe the first couple weeks, he might stay there. But if Drew's handling the ball really well, I think he'll still get a lot of minutes. Because here's the thing that always bothers me about people who are like, oh, well, once you get Drew back, you don't need Tim Frazier anymore. But like I've said this many times before, name one team in the league that's good that only has one guy capable of handling the ball on the perimeter.
But haven't we seen a lot of Galloway and Buddy doing that? I mean,
would it be impossible to
imagine a backup backcourt of Langston Galloway and Buddy Hield where they don't even need Frazier, again, against backups?
Yeah, absolutely. But I don't know who's going to win that, Galloway or Frazier, and it may be just who's ever playing hot in the game. At the beginning of the season, I wasn't sure if Galloway is going to get any minutes when I thought Drew was going to actually be playing. And I thought that, Coupon might give some minutes. I was like, Langston Galloway has no real room on this team except for maybe like 15 minutes. And that's at best. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to watch. And if Galloway is playing tough and hitting his threes, Frazier may not see the light of day at all. And that's not necessarily bad, but it could also just mean that they're going to play more three guard sets because they played a lot of them tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Boston is a team that starts three guards, though. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, definitely against different matchups. So yeah, I mean, it all comes down to that and kind of been mentioned here or there. But the big news, I would say, over the last couple of days is not that the Pelicans actually won two games. It's that Drew Holiday figures to be back. There's reports that he could be back for practice as early as tomorrow or Wednesday, and that he could play. Wednesday seems a little optimistic, but maybe as early as Friday against Portland. I guess just a litany of questions, but the main one centering around, what do you expect? We've already heard a bit of a minutes restrictions, but what do you expect as far as, does he start? How many minutes should he play? How long should it take him to get back into shape? And most importantly, how big of an upgrade is he for this Pelicans team?
So I fully expect that he will come off the bench until he has his first breakout game. And then he will finish a game and we'll see that he'll be in the starting lineup the next game. And I think that'll probably take two or three games to happen. As far as an upgrade, it's huge. I'm sorry, every single one of the guards on this team, every single one, is below average. And Drew Holiday is above average. So if you take bad and you replace it with good, or in the case of an out-of-shape Drew Holiday, maybe average. I don't know if he's out of shape. I have no idea what his regimen's been at. Probably not that intense, though, I would guess. Average is still much better than bad. So, do you think I'm being harsh, on Etuan Moore or I guess Frazier or Galloway? Do you think any of them are above average?
No, I think Etuan Moore was paid and brought in to eventually be a quality backup shooting guard. Langston Galloway is being paid like a fourth guard. Tim Frazier, like a fifth/sixth guard. I mean, that's who these guys are and the roles that they were meant to be. Buddy's just not in his developmental process yet to allow, you know, Moore to be where he should be coming off the bench. And, you know, Drew's not there, but I don't think it's an insult. I mean, they're all being paid like bench players. There's no reason that they should be insulted if you say that they're not, you know, an average starter in this league.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it's a tremendous upgrade because the one thing Drew can do is he can probe into defenses and make them pay if they make mistakes. And this team desperately needs somebody else who can do that right now. I don't know how many more fourth quarters I can watch where the other team starts amping up its defense, and the best thing the Pelicans can do is jack up a fadeaway 20-footer because they can't even figure out how to get a three-point shot off.
So, I mean, I completely agree, and Drew's coming back. I think that absolutely solidifies two of the finishing five on this team. I mean, Gentry has been kind of mixing and matching starters to go with who he's playing against, but we got two of the five finishers on this team. Let's just pick a generic team, not a great team, not a different team. Who has, like, a very average, you know, nothing spectacular finishing five? Let's go with, like, I don't know. Throw a team up there.
I'm interested to see what team you're going to pick as, like, a middle of the road. Let's see,
Let's go with Denver. Who does Denver finish games with?
That's a hard question. I have no idea, like, because they actually are mixing and matching. You want to go with, like, Detroit?
No, because they have a traditional center, and there's not many who finish games with a traditional center.
Okay.
What was Boston's finishing? They're not. Well, okay. What would Boston's finishing five be if they had Horford? Isaiah, Bradley, Smart, Crowder, and Horford.
Yeah, Crowder and Horford. If Amir Johnson or Crowder, either one of them could swing.
Yeah, but
or Smart and Crowder could swing too. But right, yeah.
Okay, so three perimeter players, a small ball four, and a 4/5. I think that's pretty normal across the league.
Yep.
If that's what you're seeing finishing games. So okay, against a fairly normal team like that, who do the Pelicans finish games with when Drew comes back?
Drew, Davis, Cunningham, Moore, and offense, defense, Hill for Galloway.
Can I plead my case for the Drew, Moore, Buddy, Hill, or Hill, Davis, Buddy Hill, finishing five?
So Davis, Hill, Buddy, Drew, and Moore. So
yeah.
Okay, that's an interesting one. I'd love to hear that case because Hield can look as lost on defense as Galloway at times.
Right, but I've basically given you three plus to potentially very good defensive players, so you could just put Buddy on the worst of the other four. Of the teams of the four, like in that Boston scenario, I put him on Jay Crowder, you know, and I'm fine. Or even Avery Bradley, who could shoot, but once he puts the ball on the ground, I'm not deathly afraid of him. But how many teams are going to have four guys on the perimeter who are really, you know, going to be able to take advantage of him defensively? I just, and even in the starting lineup, I want a Drew, Moore, Buddy, AD, Ashik starting five. I don't think you could play Omer with anybody who teams don't have to respect. And even though we've joked about Dante Cunningham being a great shooter, teams don't really respect him. They don't have to respect Solomon Hill. I would really be interested in seeing that five. And again, I've put Buddy with four plus defenders who could basically hide that side, but I've put four shooters or scorers or guys that other teams have to respect around Ashiq, and I minimize that as well. What do you think about that as a starting lineup?
So you mean as a finishing lineup?
Oh, start. No, I don't think Gentry will ever trust Ashiq to finish games unless it's against somebody like Marc Gasol.
Okay. So you basically want Buddy to roll into the lineup just to. Okay. I just feel like I can't even come up with a good objection to it. I'm really trying to. Like, let's be honest, we're rearranging some of the deck chairs, and none of the deck chairs are particularly attractive. But at least with Omer, Ashiq, and Davis, you have a chance that you're going to be a plus defensively and on the boards. And all the rest of those guys are just going to be able to shoot and move around them as necessary. And, you know, I do find it really amusing the way that they have started to use Omer Ashiq as, like, a wing player. He'll come in and he'll set up at the above the break and catch the ball and move it and passes. And then just, if you watch him, he'll slowly slip down to the corner and slide in and try to get rebounds. So it's a way that he can be somewhat useful out there offensively and not be a complete and utter space-clogging detriment. So your starting lineup is Ashiq, Davis, Heald, Frazier, Holiday, and your closing lineup is basically swapping out Ashiq for Hill, right?
Yeah, against normal teams, against a team like Detroit or Memphis or Sacramento, I keep Ashiq.
Okay.
Go ahead. Can I give you my Ashiq conspiracy theory?
Sure.
I think he's playing fairly well this year, at least better than last year, correct?
Yes.
Yet his minutes keep going down. I think that the Pelicans are doing this on purpose until the cries for the fans come out begging the team to play Ashiq more. In, like, the case of the ultimate irony of all. Like, I can't believe how many times I've seen recently that Gentry's a fool or, you know, the team is dumb because they're not playing Ashiq more. Like, I think this is all intentional by the team, in a way to get fans to rally around Ashiq.
Well, I should actually point out that if you go look at all of his percentages and ratings and stuff like that, he's actually not playing much better than last year.
But, I mean, I know the eye test, I know we're stats guys or whatever, but, uh-huh. Like, he is playing better.
I wanted to say that, just to see what you would do. Defensively, he is a different man, 100%. I have seen him cut off more drives to the basket and force them to go left or right or away from the rim than he did for the second half of the season last year in just the 10 games we've seen. He is much more locked in defensively. He's moving himself as well as he can to get to the right places. He's a much better player defensively than he was last year, where basically last year it looked like he was just beaten down all the time. It looked like he, you know, was a few steps away from just sitting down and curling into a ball. And this year he doesn't feel that way at all. So, yeah, I agree 100% that is not the conspiracy. Like, there's no way in hell they're not playing him. It's just Alvin Gentry. Alvin Gentry is a bad coach in a bad situation, and he's handling it badly.
Yeah, I find it funny that people, especially in losses, are calling for more Ashiq. I mean, gets 12 minutes tonight.
More Ashiq?
Yeah, I curious to see it at what expense. Like, you look at the minutes from today's game, like, it felt like Ajinta was in there so much more than 6 minutes, but I guess it was only six. Goodwin should, I don't think he should be playing on any team that has aspirations for the playoffs.
Wait. So you spend an entire article talking about how we need other people to get free throws, and the two people you kill this game are Tim Frazier and Goodwin, who earned 14 more free throws than Anthony Davis.
Yeah, now that Goodwin, I mean, he attacks the basket. It looks
awful.
Awful, and he got bailed out a couple of times, in my opinion, but he did get to the line today. I don't expect that to continue, but I mean, if you just look up and down this box score and go, okay, whose minutes would I reduce and hope this is the playoff team? I mean, there's a lot of guys on here. I mean, Tim Frazier got 30 minutes. He probably should get 10 to 14 on a winning team. Goodwin should probably get none. He got 15. Galloway, Jones, and even Hill probably should get 5 to 10 minutes less eat. Like, there's probably 70 to 80 minutes. I think that at least 60 to 70 of those will go to Moore and Drew, but it still feels like, even with Drew coming back, that this team is still one more rotation player away from you really feeling comfortable with, you know, nobody getting minutes that they shouldn't get. If that's the case, where do you think that this team will still need to soak up minutes with Drew and Moore back, and what kind of player would you want to get?
So I am 100% comfortable rolling with Drew and the bench mob of guards that we have. I think you can cobble together a perfectly satisfactory rotation, and you're able to do things like, say, this guy's not got it tonight, let's bring in this guy and see what he can do. Point guard, shooting guard, and probably even like 10, 15 minutes of small ball, small forward is completely covered. Beyond that, and I know this is in disagreement with you, I think Solomon Hill is perfectly fine covering a lot of those minutes of small forward. I think Dante Cunningham can cover the rest of them. Anthony Davis is our center power forward, and we just need a legitimate another big man on this team. I would go for a big man, and I know we've got tons of money poured into some players that's going to cause, you know, all kinds of financial conflict having a Sheik out there already making all this money, but I don't care. That's where I'd focus my money. I want another big man who can go out there and help Davis to have the rebounding load and a little bit of the scoring and effort load down low. And it's not Terrence Jones.
And I could give you two qualities that big man does at an above average level. What two qualities would you want? Rebounding one, it sounds like. What's the other one?
Post defense.
Okay.
And the reason why I say that is can you remember the last time we had a big man come up against us who could score in the post that we had a chance or even a prayer of stopping them?
I mean, it depends what type of guy. Omer actually does well against, you know, some of the bigger guys like Cousins or Gasol, but he's terrible against guys like Nene Hilario and guys who with even an ounce of quickness in the post.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah,
if Omer was my backup center and Davis played like 25 minutes at power forward and 10 minutes at center, and then I had another guy who could play, soak up some center minutes, I think I'm fine. Like, I just need somebody who can soak up essentially like 25 minutes at center and be able to do some of the heavy lifting for Davis. And I mean, we're going to need some more shot creation, and I know that's what we're missing on the edge, but I feel like that's a bigger gap. Because I feel every game I feel like we're going in and we're going to get killed around the rim. Because Davis can't do everything. He's got to defend the guy and come back and get the rebound.
Yeah, I don't think any one position shores and solves everything. But to me, when I look at this team, like even tonight in a game that they won, they went 6 of 21 from 3. Like, they still can't shoot the three ball, and Drew isn't going to come back and fix that. He's not Steph Curry. So, to me, you give him another small forward, and ideally one that is a threat from the perimeter. I want Cunningham playing more at the four. I want Hill more at the four and Davis more at the five. And you say, well, yeah, then you do that, and, you know, the other team is just going to beat up on Davis and beat you down low. I don't think they would, because I think if you've seen any time where we're actually playing small ball well and the guys are hitting their shots, the other team then has to adjust to us and puts their small ball lineup on the floor. The reason they don't have to now is because they could still have bigger guys out there defending the Dante Cunninghams and the Solomon Hills of the world, because they can't drive by you. They can't, you know, hit the three with regularity. Like, two guys that I think have major faults in their game, Rudy Gay and Nikola Pekovic, I think Rudy Gay helps this team out more now. And he's not even a good example of the type of small forward I'd want, but just two really flawed defensive players. I think that a wing would help this team so much more now, and I'm telling you, teams would adjust and play small against us more because they would actually have to.
Okay.
Rudy Gay.
Mm-hmm. You're not going to get me to get excited or happy about that idea.
Get
Sorry.
Excited.
No. So is like Rudy Gay the kind of, like, a guy who's maybe not so efficient offensively, but okay, he can create his own shot and not be in a total embarrassment, and then hit open shots when they come his way? That's what you're looking for?
I mean, I would want a better catch-and-shoot guy.
Alan Crabb from last year.
Okay.
Something like that?
Yeah. Yeah, give me Alan Crabb on this team. Last year's Alan Crabb, you put him on this team. Who would you say is a comparable center? Same level as Alan Crabb, but at the center position.
So centers are so difficult because I want to say someone like Vucevic, but he's too good of a scorer.
What about Cody Zeller?
Yeah, Zeller's a good choice.
So you think Cody Zeller would help this team more than Alan Crabb from last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like I said, I would definitely take both, but this team, I think you unlock the potential of this team when Davis is at the five and you're playing small around him, and you can't do that a lot unless the other team has to respect it so much that they go small with you, and then he's not getting beat up and, getting pulled out on the perimeter as much. So I just think that's the key to unlocking this team. I think you bring another big in there, and, yeah, you solve a couple of problems, but you're still going 6 of 25 from 3 every night, and you still don't have the space or the punch down the stretch to score in the final 5 minutes of a close game to win it. So
yeah.
I just give me another wing on this team, and I'll be happy.
In a lot of respects, like, what we're feeling is the loss of Ryan Anderson, quite honestly, on our offensive end. Because Ryan Anderson was not a super efficient player, if you take a look at his numbers the past couple of years, even though he took a lot of threes. But Ryan Anderson could manufacture shots, and he could hit them at a rate that wasn't embarrassing. So last year, when this team needed some shots, sometimes Ryan Anderson would help bail them out by creating those shots for us. Although, I will say, I much prefer Anthony Davis manufacturing those shots, but
I like to say a little more that we're feeling the loss of Devin Brown still.
Devin, really? Bring up Devin Brown of all people.
Devin Brown, yeah.
I was thinking Lee Nalen myself. He was a small forward.
Yeah, but he didn't look like a Ninja Turtle.
True, he didn't.
I like what Drew's going to bring to this team, and how he's going to kind of put a lot of things back in their place as far as guys playing where they should be playing, and, you know, get a lot of quality three-guard lineups out there, and you know, maybe use a guy like Goodwin a little more sparingly. But, you know, I still think this team is one piece away, and that brings us to another guy is let's say Drew comes back this week and he's back into shape in 10 to 12 days and he's fully ready to go, and then all of a sudden Tyreek Evans gets cleared and he's ready to come back. You know, where do you insert him? Do you look to try to trade him for a piece immediately? Do you give him a lot of minutes? What role do you use him in? What would you see Tyreek as far as where he could possibly fit in to this team if he comes back and Drew's here as well?
I think you ease him into the small forward minutes, and then after he plays a couple games, you showcase him for, like, move him to the starting lineup, have him play that way for three or four games and see what you can get from him. Like, and in some respects, it's a little crazy, like, because this team, we just talked about how much they need shot creation, and Tyreek Evans, he'll create a shot. Probably miss it, but he'll create it. So, like, but I mean, it's Lance Stephenson effect. He's going to get in there. He's going to make some shots. He's going to get some shots. The difference between him and Lance Stephenson is he is a giant bowl. So when he smashes into all those guys under the rim, they all go flying, and our guys can come in and get clean up offensive rebounds. Tyreek Evans, does anyone honestly believe that he is going to be signing a new contract with the New Orleans Pelicans in the summer?
It's one thing I honestly couldn't imagine.
Right. I agree 100%. So even if it's just any sort of asset, a second-round pick, 2 second-round picks if you're lucky, you know how I feel about second-round pick. I think they're garbage. Just send them out. Let them go.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to get something that could ideally play this year or at least help in some kind of way. Like, you know, an Omri Caspi wants out of Sacramento, like that kind of
thing. Like, Sacramento is so messed. Like, is that 3 different people now who have asked for a trade?
Yeah.
And people still want DeMarcus Cousins. On what planet do you look at that team and see all these people clamoring to get out of it, and you're like, oh, but DeMarcus, he's not the problem? So many people say that. DeMarcus, he's okay. He's an amazing talent. It's okay. Like, the guy is poison. I'm just tired.
Yeah, people are always going to want talent and think they could fix it. But, I find it interesting. Like, I could see the case being made for, you know, Tyreek wants out, but I could see Gentry and Dell basically saying to him, hey, let's use each other. We'll use you to try to get into the playoffs. You use us to try to get a new deal. But if you look around and nobody's going to really give you anything of quality, and Tyreek could help you win more games today than, I mean, again, you're giving guys like Archie Goodwin and Dante Cunningham 38 minutes. You give those same 38 to Tyreek. I think on most nights he's going to produce far more than those guys did. You know, would it be the craziest idea in the world just to use him and his fuel and motivation for wanting a new contract to try to, you know, get you into the playoffs if you're Dell and Gentry, who might be fired if they don't?
Well, I think that is their motivation. But although I'm for everything I hear, I'd be pretty surprised if Gentry wanted to play Tyreek Evans long minutes. But I guess at some point, I believe it was Amin who said that he would play the devil if he thought it would help his team win.
Yeah, I mean, do you think he wants to play Archie Goodwin or Alexi Ajinsa? You know, I don't think he wants to play any of these guys, but whatever to get him wins. I think that would be interesting, and you're talking about possibly a huge influx of talent that could be with this team. So, I mean, they're 2-9 now. Let's even be nice. Let's put them at 3-9 after 12 games, and then Drew comes back. So you got 70 games left.
Mm-hmm.
Just looking around, I mean, what do you think makes the seventh or eighth seed in the West this year, how many games would you be saying that you need to win to get into the Western Conference playoffs?
So I felt that the Western Conference got a lot weaker than it used to be. I've felt that way for a little bit of time now. I would probably bet that 41 wins is going to get you there. So I really think 500, yeah.
So they would have to go, what, 38 and 32? So, I think if you look at the season as a bunch of 10-game stretches, if they go 6-4 every 10-game stretch, they're definitely making the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
Even with this hole they dug themselves.
Absolutely. You're asking an awful lot, though.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to figure out. So if they go 6-4 half of the time and 5-5 the other half of the time, you know, they're probably, I mean,
they're
I'm
right
trying
there.
To think. Yeah, so they have to play pretty much the way that, let's say, Oklahoma City has played this year. Oklahoma City is right now sitting there at 6-5. You know, they're plus 0.4 point differential. You know, they have their games where they look really good and beat good teams, and then games where they lose to somebody like Orlando. But, like, that's the type of level of team they probably have to be over the next 70 games to make the playoffs. So I think if somehow the Pelicans could shut injuries off, we would say that that's very possible.
Right.
How many games do you think, if the goal is to go 38 and 32 over the final 70 games, how many games do Drew and AD have to play together over those 70 for you to think that they could pull off 38 wins?
66 each.
66 each and together?
Yeah.
So if one
Well,
of
it
them,
doesn't have to be together. Doesn't have to be together.
One of them has a stretch where they're out 2 to 3 weeks.
That's,
I mean, that's how thin the margin of error is.
Yeah, like essentially, if you took, like right now, because of what they just went through, going 2-9, if they have any stretch where they lose, again, 75% of their games, and we're talking 8-9 games, they're done. They can't bear that anymore. This was their skid, and they can't afford any more skids at all.
Yeah, and what would you think would constitute a successful season that doesn't result in playoffs from here on out that you think should also warrant Alvin Gentry and or Dell Demps keeping their job and you going into the offseason optimistic?
Okay, first off, I've already been on record saying I don't want them to keep their job. So there isn't any sort of optimistic moment where.
So is the worst case scenario that this team plays pretty good over the next 70 games, but not good enough to make the playoffs, but good enough to keep their jobs because we'll, you know, they'll be able to say, well, if we were healthy at the beginning of the year, we would have been better. Is that, and they get like a 10th or 12th pick instead of a top pick. Is that the worst case scenario for how this season plays out?
Yeah, I think so.
And how
honestly, I would rather see this team like only win 27 games this season and get a high pick and make and have Gentry and Dell gone than have them, you know, 37 at their over under with 37 wins and have Gentry and Dell be able to say, "Oh, we stayed at 500 after that horrible stretch at the beginning." And then keep their jobs. I think that would be an utter disaster. If they make the playoffs, I'm still, like, we've already seen these guys get fired, like, guys get fired after making playoffs, so I don't think that that's a guaranteed thing. I still 100% believe that Danny Ferry will be our GM when our next draft comes around.
Yeah, if this team makes the playoffs after a 1-9 start, I don't see either way either guy's fired. that would be a, at least that would look like a, you know, a comeback of epic proportion that those guys would get a lot of credit for. But I agree, the Drew comes back, they're a 5-15 team over the final 70 games, and they get close to the playoffs but don't make it, get the 13th pick, and Alvin and Dell say, well, yeah, we're on the right course, now we'll just get to start next season healthy, and, you know, with Drew back and another couple of rookies from this class, maybe one or two more signs. Like, I think that's the worst case scenario. Don't you kind of see that being the most likely way this plays out, or do you see something else being more likely?
No, I think having
the most likely.
The most likely thing is some 32 wins. I really do.
But this gets hurt again, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous to think that we're not going to have stretches with other injuries. We just had a discussion where we're like, the team will start playing better when Drew Holiday and Tyreek Evans come back and start giving us firepower. Like, when have they ever come back and stayed back? Drew Holiday, guess last year, played half the season on 24-minute restriction and then get picked it up. But Tyreek Evans he's had three surgeries on his knee. He's not coming back and giving us anything real, not for any length of time. And who knows what Drew's going to give us? He's literally been probably doing very little in the way of basketball for the last 2 months. And Anthony Davis is already walking like an old man.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's possible. I think it's possible that it takes
time. I want to be optimistic, but no, I can't be.
I think your scenario is, I mean, what we've talked about is more optimistic, though, because if it plays out the way you're saying, then that would be better for the long-term health of the franchise. I think what I'm saying is the most likely is actually pessimistic, because that kills the franchise.
Right.
I mean, this team winning 38 games, keeping both of those guys, and having a pick that's meh, you know, is maybe the worst way this plays out. But I think that's going to be close to what happens. I think they're going to get close to 500 by about January 1st, and people are going to start talking playoffs, and then right as that happens, there'll be something like, you know, 19-22 in January, and there'll be on the outside looking in, a game back, and then another injury is going to happen, and, you know, then they'll play well again in March, and yeah, we'll see something like 37 wins or something like that, and just the worst case of all scenarios. So,
okay,
I actually hope you're closer to being right.
All
right,
Mr. Pessimistic, let's move on to the games that are coming up this week. So we need to make a quick review of what's coming up and then make our picks. So we just talked about the Boston game. We're at Orlando on Wednesday, home for Portland, and then home for Charlotte is on a back-to-back. So three games, Orlando, Portland, Charlotte. Who's the most interesting team for you there?
I think you could pick almost anybody, and the answer is always going to be Orlando to me.
Okay.
It's because I don't get it. I don't get the roster construction. I don't get the coach they picked for the way they were going to construct the roster. I don't get the rotations, and then they go to Oklahoma City, and they beat the Thunder, and then they lose to the Pacers tonight by 20. Like, I just cannot figure this team out, what they want to be and how they want to be it. It absolutely fascinates me, and I think that they, more than any other team we play this week, we could either be saying, oh, sure, that guy went off against us, or we could be talking about our first and maybe only blowout win of the season as, you know, nobody shows up. Like, I don't understand this team and what they're trying to be and who, like, I don't even know who they would say their number one guy is, who's number two, who's number three. Like, I have no clue how they would answer that question internally or who their cornerstone is. Like, I don't know any of the answers to any of those questions for this team, and it fascinates me.
Well, they were trying to claim that Aaron Gordon was going to be Paul George and be their small forward shot creator.
And then they took him out of the starting lineup.
And then he played fairly poorly, unsurprisingly, because like, he didn't even do that in college. Like, he was not a point forward in college. So suddenly he's going to be a point forward in the pros? You've got to give him more time than that. And then, yeah, they take him out and replace him with Jeff Green. Ooh, that's an improvement. But, like, so here's the question I've been dying to ask you. Every single, like, year for the past 4 years, you and I have had this thing where we're like, you look at an opposing team and you're like, that perimeter dude is going to torch us. And it's because our defense has been abysmal on perimeter guys. And we just saw a Lakers game this year where perimeter guys were just torching us. Do you look at this Orlando Magic team, maybe Evan Fournier or I don't know, Augustin, and feel like there's anybody here against this team's defense who's going to torch us?
Yeah, I mean, Fournier would probably be the most obvious choice. But I actually think that DJ Augustine would be the guy in this game, just because I just think Tim Frazier is such a liability on that end. I'm actually hoping that Peyton gets more minutes, you know, because I'm afraid of what DJ Augustine could do. But I don't know. I mean, are they gonna utilize those guys, or are they gonna try to go to Ibaka more? I mean, even in the preseason game we played against them, Ibaka was kind of their number one guy that they were going to in that game. So I don't know how they're going to play. I'm a little afraid of what they might do to us on the offensive glass, and I think this is a game where you're going to see more Ashik than you saw tonight. But if I had to pick a guy that we go, you know, that we're upset with that night that went off on us, I would say DJ Augustine.
Okay. And my second question for you, Solomon Hill at $12 million per year, and he's got a tidy 8 PER, or Bismack Biyombo at $16 million per year, who also has a tidy 8 PER?
Ugh.
I believe they're the same duration.
Yeah. Who do you think right now would be more tradable?
Biyombo or Hill?
Yeah, like right now.
Biyombo has still got more of a reputation than Hill does for success.
You think you could give Biyombo away?
I don't know. You asked who was more tradable. I think Biyombo, you might be able to find somebody who would take him. Take a flyer on him, more likely than you would on Hill.
I still think there's more big men in the league.
And it's still $16 million. Like, you could fit, like, I mean, you could basically have Hill and Langston Galloway for that.
Okay.
It's crazy. I don't know. I just wanted to bring it up. Because, you know, he, again, is one of those guys who had, like, a series in the playoffs he was just amazing in. And he made a mint off of it. You still there?
Yeah. No, I don't want either. So who would be the team out of the four you're most interested in?
I'm just interested in Charlotte, because I felt like they lost some pretty significant players. I thought that, you know, the defection of Lynn, and they lost Courtney Lee as well as they did in keeping Marvin Williams and Batum for discounts, and just, you know, getting Kid Gilchrist back. I still love Kid Gilchrist and his insane defense. I feel like they should be falling off, but they don't seem to be falling off, and it's mostly because Kemba's scoring 25 points a game. Did you ever think Kemba was going to rise to the level of being of enough of a scorer to be more than like a 20-point guy at best? Do you think he maintains this?
I don't know. I mean, I was debating between Kemba and Jimmer Fredette coming out of college, and Jimmer is putting up monster numbers in China.
In China, he scored 50 the other day.
Ballin'. Yeah, I don't know how Kemba does it. I mean, he's not ultra quick. He's not that much bigger. You know, up before this season, he wasn't really a deadly shooter, but I mean, he's basically been Damian Lillard this year.
Yeah.
Like he's
his line is very similar.
So, I don't know how it's happening. I'm happy for Gilchrist that he's come back this year. I don't know how they've made Roy Hibbert a factor again, but he's actually playing well. But yeah, I mean Nicholas Batum has regressed, and predictably so after a contract season. Marvin Williams a little bit too, but
yeah,
they just.
I wish I had a player who could regress to 13-6-7.
Yeah, but on 38% shooting and less than 30% from three,
it's true.
but yeah, I mean they just have a plethora of guys giving them solid minutes. Like they have real rotation NBA players. I mean, Sessions and Bellinelli aren't going to excite you, and even their stats don't look good, but they're professional NBA players coming off the bench who
have a skill or two. Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, they've just got, they keep coming at you with professionals. They don't have, a Tim Frazier playing 30 minutes, or they don't have an Archie Goodwin playing 15 minutes. Like, they just have a bunch of professional, real NBA rotation players, and over the course of 48 minutes, you're going to eventually have a cold stretch, and they're not, because they're not playing scrubs anywhere, so that's how they're winning games.
Yeah. I have a feeling that Michael Kidd-Gilchrist's stat line is what you were hoping Solomon Hill would give us.
I wanted more three-point shooting. I know that Hill wasn't a three-point shooter, but 1 for 2.5 a game, I think, was reasonable to expect.
Okay.
You know, 1 for 2.7, something like that, and, we can't get that.
Okay. All right, but it's just interesting. So I want to see what Kemba's doing out there. I find this whole team kind of interesting just to watch. I also want to see... Does Marvin Williams give a damn? Because we know Marvin Williams is a notorious contract year guy, and that's not a contract year anymore. So he's got 12 PER. So I have a feeling he may be in his year after the fat payday.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see Drew. I mean, Drew's might come back and have Lillard and
Kemba.
Lillard and Kemba back to back.
Yeah. Any chance you think Drew will be back on Wednesday, or you think it's Friday, Saturday?
I think Friday would be there. I think he could be back for Wednesday as far as practice or whatever, but I think it would be his first game would be Friday at the earliest.
Okay. So prediction for the week. Orlando, Portland, Charlotte, they go.
Orlando, Portland, Charlotte. So just three games. I'm going to go 1-2. Anthony Davis just doesn't look right. And even with Drew coming back, I think AD is going to continue to struggle just because, he's not looking right now.
Yeah, I'm going 1-2, but more because of schedule reasons than anything else. Like, it's on the road at Orlando. They get one day off, and then they have a back-to-back. With Portland, Charlotte, and yeah, it's at home, but it's still back-to-back. It's kind of a rough four-day stretch. So 1-2, and I think they take the game against Charlotte.
All right, I'll take that.
right, so you got anything else to talk about?
That is it. Looking forward to another victory in this upcoming week and hopefully no injuries.
That's right. That'd be great, wouldn't it? And thanks, everybody, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back Sunday or Monday, one of those days when I get my act together and can actually record properly.